holding on your test on the day, 10 lines from the top. On the Mifflerath. Okay. We were discussing the whole issue of Hagroma, where the Shechita is done too high on the corner, on the windpipe. We had the various opinions, how high is too high. And we were discussing, the issue, various issues about if you did part of it properly and part of it improperly. Part of it with Hagroma, part of it without. We talked about where the first two-thirds were good and then the first, and then the last third was no good, or the other way around, or where you have one-third one way and the other third another way and the third-third back the original way. Either the first and last are good or the middle one is no good. So we had a number of different opinions on the subject, which leads to a machlokas rishonim, who exactly we passed in life, yeah. And the reason, and ultimately then it says in the Rama brings in Shulchan Aruch that therefore the minhag is to be, the minhag is to make, is to declare the animal trait if there was any hagroma at all, whether at the beginning or at the end. You're welcome. So the minhag is to declare the animal trait as long as there was some kind of hagroma, whether at the beginning, whether in the middle, whether at the end, to be on the safe side. First of all, to be on the safe side because we don't know necessarily which opinion in the Gemara to follow. And second of all, because there's also the issue that if you do hagroma on the corner, on the windpipe, you may end up also by accident hitting the vesh, the esophagus. Yes. You may end up hitting the esophagus as well, and then if even a tiny cut in that before the actual shechita makes the animal not kosher.
So by
minhag, any hagroma is considered trait to be on the safe side. There is, in cases of hex and meruba, there's possibilities of being makel. In particular, the Alter Rebbe talks about you can have a case where the person knows for a fact, let's say because he was holding the corner while shechting and holding it away from the vesh, to make sure that he didn't accidentally cut it. But basically the idea is, yeah, I mean, you have various examples. Here you have, for example, this is after they're cut. This is the kona and the vesh, respectively, in a chicken. Mm-hmm. And you have similar things.
You have to cut,
so we're going to learn in the next paragraph. You have to cut, in the case of an animal, you have to cut at least more than half of each one of the two pipes. In the case of a bird, you need to cut at least more than half of one or the other of the pipes. We'll talk about that later on in the next paragraph on Chavzayin and thereabouts. So that's the basic idea. So again, so we were talking about the various possibilities. What happens if you did hagroma at the beginning or in the middle or at the end? Okay. So now
that's
Melissa. We're going to talk about that today as well. We're not getting to that right now, but wait. Okay. So we're holding 10 lines from the top by the parenthesis. Simen Bachad. This is a simen for the names of the three Amoraim who are involved in the next discussion. Yosef Rav Abba Choded de Rakhana. Rav Abba is sitting as a Talmud behind Rav Kahana. The Yosef Rav Kahana Kameh de Rav Yehuda. Rav Kahana in turn is sitting in front of Rav Yehuda, as we've had before, that Rav Kahana therefore is the senior Talmud, so he sits closer to the front. Rav Abba is a junior Talmud, so he sits further back. And they're both learning from Rav Yehuda. The Yosef HaKomer, and he's sitting and saying as follows: when you have this kind of thing, the Yosef somebody kameh of somebody, the Yosef HaKomer, many times it means that the senior Talmud is saying it. In this case, that's what it would be. That Rav Kahana is asking the question as follows. One idea, as Mephoshim points out a couple of times, is the usual way was that the Talmidim are sitting in front of the Rebbe. When they want to ask a question, they get up to ask for permission. And if they receive permission to ask a question, then they sit back down and ask. That's why you have the double Yosef. That's why you have Yosef, Rav Kahana, Kameh de Rav Yehuda, Yosef HaKomer. So first he's sitting there as a Talmud, and then after getting permission to speak, he sits down and says, okay.
Absolutely.
So the question is, again, Shochat Shlish V'Higrim Shlish V'Shochat Shlish Mahu, what would be the din if you did one-third of the Shechita in the proper place on the corner, then one-third too high up, or too low down for that matter, whatever, outside of the proper area, the Shochat Shlish, and then you did the final third of the Shechita in the correct place again, Mahu, what would be the din? So that was one of the discussions. That was one of the discussions that we had. That was one of the discussions that we had before. We said before that Rabbi Yehuda had quoted in the name of Rav that such a case it would be kosher. So now he's asking Rosh Lakish had said even if it's higher up. But Rosh Lakish agrees that the basic concept of Mugremis, he just holds that it's higher up than anybody else says, that it can be anywhere in the Koyva. We're not getting into that. The point is, wherever you consider to be the upper limit, or the lower limit for that matter, it's possible to do Hagrama by going above or below that. So again, the question is, if you did one-third good, one-third no good, one-third good, so the Kahana is asking what's the din, Amalei, and Rabbi Yehuda answers in Shchita Tekshera. The Shchita is kosher, as we learned yesterday that Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rab that the Shchita is kosher in such a case. What about the other way around? He asked, Higrim Shlish V'Shochat Shlish V'Higrim Shlish Mahu. What about the other way around? He did one-third Hagroma in the wrong place, then one-third Shchita in the right place, and one-third Hagroma in the wrong place. What would be the din? So then Rabbi Yehuda tells him the Shchita is possible, which again is consistent with what we said yesterday that Rabbi Yehuda said. We said that in each of these cases, we said Rav Huna argued with Rabbi Yehuda, but here we're talking what Rabbi Yehuda said. Okay. Next he asks as follows. Shachat b'makim nekeh, Masi. What would happen if you were to shech in a place where there was already a hole in the windpipe? So we've discussed yesterday the fact that you can have a hole in the windpipe does not necessarily make the animal trace. In order for it to be traced, it would have to be that the hole surrounds most of the circumference of the windpipe. Then the animal would be traced. Less than that, it's not traced. Again, the pastor says the air is able to get in and out. Okay, so you'll have some of it will leak into the chest cavity, but not enough to kill the animal, I guess, is the idea. Whatever it is, that's the halacha. So therefore, the question is, what happens shachat v'makim nekev mahu? So what happens if you already had a hole in the corner, and then you continued shechting in that same place, and so it turns out that part of the cut through the corner is a cut that already existed, and the rest of it is what you're doing. What's the din? So he says, amalei shchitasik sheila. So Rabbi Yehuda tells him the shchita in that case is kosher, which we talked about on Amud Aleph. We talked about that idea that we mentioned in connection with Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda, that we could argue that Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda would say similar to doing Hagrama at the beginning, where you have, okay, so there was a hole there, big deal. There could be a hole. Okay. What about, he asked the other way around.
The hole was there before, right?
Yeah,
he didn't have
anything. Yeah. Now, what about the other way around? Shachat u'pogaboy nekev mahu. Now, what happens the other way around? Suppose that you start shechting, and then you wind up getting to a hole that was already there, meaning, in other words, here, if you look in the diagram here, you can see that, okay, so what it is you shech beginning from the front of the neck, which is what we're going to discuss in the next mission. And the normal way of shechting is beginning from the front of the neck. Because in the back of the neck, in particular, in the back of the neck, you have the neck bone, you have the spinal cord, and if you were to cut through that before you shech the simonim, then the animal's going to be available. So we'll deal with that. We'll deal with that detail in the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it. But the point is, you can have one case where you're shechting from the front. There was a hole in the front of the corner, and therefore, as you're shechting, you end up going to that hole and then continuing to cut through over there. And the other way around would be the hole is on the back side of the corner. So you're cutting through intact corner, then you reach the point where there's that hole.
Okay.
So then, what would be the din? Amalei, and Rabbi Yehuda tells him in that case, shchitas tzura. In that case, the shchita is possible.
If there's a hole
in the back half, and therefore that you started cutting through, and therefore you wound up cutting into that hole,
Hold on.
Let's learn and we'll find out.
Okay.
Also, Rab Abba Amra Kamed Rab Eliezer. Okay. So Rab Abba heard all this. He was sitting behind Rav Kahana and hearing the whole exchange. He went and told this over to Rab Elazar. Also, Rab Elazar Amra Kamed Rab Yechon, and Rab Elazar in turn told it over to Rav Yechon. Amalei Maishna, and he asked Rav Yechonon, or Rav Yechonon rather asked Rav Elazar, Maishna, why should there be a difference? Apparently you're quoting this to me, so I guess you agree with it.
He didn't agree.
He quoted it. No. That's what? This is Rav Yechonon. We didn't have Rav Yechonon before. We had Rav Kahana and Rav Yehuda have the discussion. Rav Yehuda is the one who said in this last case it's possible. So now Rav Elazar is telling this over to Rav Yechonon. And so Rabbi Yechon asked him, why do you think there should be a difference in that case?
Okay.
Amalei, when there's a hole in the front half or versus in the back half. Amalei, so Rabbi Lazar answered him like this. Shachat b'makim nekev. Because if you shech where there was already a hole, in other words, again, there was a hole existing already there, and then you started cutting into it. Fine. Nasa Kamisha Shachat over the Chavim Begomar Yisrael. That is the equivalent of as if a goy began the shchita, and then a Yisrael, and then a Yisrael finished it. Now we have the concept we discussed yesterday about Naska Chiyusa. We have, you want to have that the point at which the animal loses its life force is done during a period of proper shchita. Now, if you were to have, let's say, if a goy were to start the initial shchita and cut through, let's say, half the kana, where at that point the animal's not dead yet, and the halacha, you don't have a proper shchita yet, if at that point the yisrael were to continue, and therefore he cuts through the next, he cuts through the 51st percent of the kana, and thereby now the animal dies, and the vesh, right? Then fine. So then it's valid because the nafka chiyusa, the life force of the animal, has left it when proper shchita was being done. So therefore, by the same logic, you had a hole there and you continued in the hole by definition was less than half the circumference of the kana, because if it was more than half the circumference, the animal's treif anyway. So therefore, when you're continuing cutting through that hole, then it's no different than if a goy had created that hole there in the first place. Yeah, because in other words, the point is, either way, it's possible shchita. Either way, the whole is not the result of a valid shchita. On the other hand, shachat or pogavoy netev, but if it's the other way around, if you're shechting through intact kona, and then you find out that there's a hole at the far end, nasik, and you should shachat yisrael, but go away with gechavim, then it's the equivalent of a yisrael beginning a shchita, and the goy finishing it, in other words, the goy doing the 51st percent, which would be possible, because chayus, so the animal's chayus leaves it at the point where the goy is shechting it, and therefore the same thing over here. You're cutting through the kona, you reach 50%, and then all of a sudden you find there's a hole there. So now the 51st, 52nd, et cetera, percent comes as a result of the hole. And therefore it's not a valid shchita. The animal's chayus leaves it at that point. No, well, yeah, you open up afterwards and you realize that there was a hole there, yeah. Same as any other trefa that you would discover.
Here it doesn't make much difference. This one is after the 50%.
Right, that's the point.
So
right.
In Israel, cuts 50%, and the hole reaches right 51%. That's possible.
Right, exactly. So I guess apparently then the idea would be, if let's say for example the hole only covers let's say 10% of the circumference, and therefore when you cut through 51% of the kana. Basala, we're trying to learn over here, please. Okay, so if let's say the hole only covered 10% of the circumference of the kana, so by the time you cut through 51%, you haven't yet reached that hole, the pashtus, there wouldn't be a problem. The point is, you don't want that the hole itself should constitute the 51st percent, or any part of it. Okay, so that's where Elazar is explaining the reason why Rabbi Yehuda would make that distinction between whether the hole was at the front or at the back, whether you reached the hole first or whether you reached the hole only in the process of the shchita. Okay. Well, that's his reason. However, Rabbi Yochanan disagreed with it. Kari alay ovikachavim, or actually goy, really, it's supposed to be an uncensored Gemara. He said on him, he says on Rabbi Elazar, goy, which means Rashi stresses, it doesn't mean he's calling him a goy, chas v'shalom. It means like he's making fun of what he's saying. Like you're saying the whole reason you're explaining is it's based on the idea of the shchita of a goy. One has nothing to do with the other. You could be saying goy all day long and it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything as far as this halacha.
Meaning what?
Meaning, in other words, I disagree with the premise. Whether the hole is there at the beginning or whether the hole is at the end, it shouldn't matter.
It had nothing to do.
Omar Rava, and in fact Rava says in a later generation, Shatter, Kari Alei, goy. In fact, yes, Rabbi Yochanan had good reason to say on Rabbi Lazo's explanation, goy, to say it's meaningless to talk about Shchitat goy in this connection. It's not relevant. Because the difference is like, Bishlema Hossam, you know why over there when a goy finishes the Shchita, meaning he cuts the 51st percent, why is it possible? Midahavale Yisrael, Mishchat Ruba. Since the Yisrael should have shechted the roiv, and he didn't, v'loy shachat, and he only shechted half, so therefore he didn't accomplish anything yet. Ki nafka chayusa, so when the chayus of the animal leaves it, when the 51st percent is shechted, v'yodadu evit kuchavim kanafka, then it's at the hands of a goy, and a goy shchita is possible, as we're going to learn in the next paragraph. So therefore, fine, in that case, you would say, if the yid only cut through 50%, and then the goy cut through the 51st percent, yeah, then you have a possible shchita. But, says Rava, explaining what Rabbi Yechon was saying, Mechti Mishchat Shachit, after all, the Yisrael did do a shchita, he shechted whatever was available, and the fact that less than half the kana was punctured does not yet make the animal treif. So therefore, he shafted whatever he could. So it's as if we have to consider as if the kana was whole. Mali b'makim nekev, mali pogah by nekev. So who cares whether the nekev, whether the hole is at the front or at the back, whether he shafted into the hole, whether he started with the hole and then continued from there, or whether he started with intact kana and then ended up at the hole. Either way, it shouldn't make it. Either way, it should be kosher.
What counts is 51%.
Yes, exactly.
Regardless where the hole is,
right.
So if the hole is in the front and the yid cuts 51% further down...
Well, no, we don't mean 51% further down, obviously, then no. What we mean is, in other words, if the hole, let's say, in the front covers... If the hole in front, let's say, covers 50%... It covers 50%. So 50% is not enough to make the animal trachea. It would have to be right. So if you have a hole that covers 50% of the circumference, and then the yid cuts a little further over there to do the 51st percent, then okay, you have to do the vesht also, obviously, but we're not dealing with that. The point is that so far as the kana is concerned, good, a valid shtita has been done. And if the other way around, if the shtita is on the back half of the kana, same idea. He starts cutting through 50% of the kana. He reaches the 51st percent. He discovers there's already a hole there. Doesn't matter. The fact is, he cut whatever was available over there to cut. And therefore, Rava argues, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan is arguing that the shchita should be kosher, not like what Rabbi Hoda has said.
Now, the vesh or the kana, similar dinner?
Well, no, the vesh has a whole different din, because the vesh, even a tiny hole before the shchita, makes the animal trace. Or the veiler, even technically, whatever, but yeah.
I'm not sure. What counts? Is it the amount of the whole kaneh that counts?
It has to be nashkach kiyusa. It has to be that when the animal's life force leaves it, it's as a result of a proper shchita. So when a goy does the 51st percent, and you don't have a proper shchita, because a goy...
Nashkach
kiyusa, by definition, is 51%. That's the definition. By definition. That's the definition is that when you shech roiv of the kaneh and the vesh, then the animal's life force leaves it. In the case of a bird, you only need roiv of one.
So is it the 51st percent that counts?
Yes, that's the 51st percent that counts.
And all the rest doesn't?
Well, you need the other 50% to reach 51%, but yeah.
Well, not necessarily. You could say the goy makes 50% and the yid 1%.
And that's why we said that would be cautious. We argue that.
51%
of the count. Fine. The point is that the 51%, which is the point at which the animal's highest leaves it, has to have been done as valid shchita.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not the run of the land?
Yeah. It means that the cut beyond the roiv has to have been done with a proper shchita. Yeah. Okay. So here we're talking about a case where a goy started and a yid finished, or the other way around, but we're also talking about a case where there's a hole there, and then you cut into that hole and continued the shchita. So Rabbi Hodad wanted to make a distinction. No, that's for the vesh. For the kana, you'll have to have the majority of the circumference, the roiv of the circumference would have to have a hole for the animal to be traced.
So Rabbi Yehuda wanted to make a distinction
between whether you started with the hole and continued, or whether you started a regular shchita and then bumped into a hole, and Rabbi Yochanan and Rabba are arguing there's no distinction. Okay.
As long as the hole is not more than 50%.
As long as it's not more than 50%. If it's more than 50%, the animal traced anyway, yeah, then there's nothing to talk about. Right? Okay. Yeah. Mishnah says,
It doesn't matter, actually.
It really doesn't matter. If the hole covers 51 or more percent of the kana, then it doesn't matter what level. It doesn't matter whether you shecht it at that particular point or someplace else. Either way, the animal is free.
In
circumference. If the circumference of the kana is 10 inches, let's say, then if you have 5.1 inches of it, doesn't matter. No, if it's lower down in the place of shchita, depending how low it is, if it's lower than the makom hashchita, are you talking about lower than the place that you actually shechted, or lower than the zone that's available for shechting?
Then it's still
the same thing, whether it's 50% or whether it's 51% makes a difference. Okay. All right, Mishnah says, Hashchit min hatzadin, if somebody shechts the animal from the side. Now, normally you shecht an animal, as we're going to go on to say, normally you do the shchita from the front of the neck. And the result of that is you get first the kana, then you get the vesh, and then later on, in back of those, is the mafrekis, which is the collarbone. With a bird, actually, it's arranged a little bit differently. There was a diagram somewhere in here that illustrates how they're arranged in a bird versus in an animal. I'll have to see if I can find it, but the bottom line is, you can't shech from the back for reasons that we're going to discuss too. You have to shech. There's a proper way to shech from the front, but if you shech it from the side, shchitasik shera, then the shchita is kosher. Now Rashi says actually that doesn't just mean v'dyeved. Rashi learns that would mean even the hatchila you can shech from the side.
Why?
Because as long as you're cutting through the kana and the vesh before you reach anything else, then you're good. In other words, again, because you have the mafrekis, you have the collarbone, the neck bone behind you. The neck bone, you have two problems, actually. You have a number of problems if you cut through it. One of them is going to nick the shita knife, right? Another problem is... No. Okay, but you have a number of problems. If you cut through the mafrekis, you have a number of problems. One of them is, yes, you're going to blunt the shita knife. Another problem is that you're going to cause blood is going to get absorbed into the muscles, and then it's going to be much harder to get it out with pasturing. That's another issue you have with cutting through the mafrekis first. And a third problem you have is if you cut through it before you cut through the simanim, then you cut through the spinal cord and the animal's nevela or teresa right then and there. Okay, here's a good diagram of it. Okay, so it's a little bit different in birds, actually. It's a little bit different in birds, but in animals, you have like this. Here's the front of the neck. So you have the kona. Next to it and sort of a little bit behind it, you have the vesh. It's sort of bunched up over here because when the animal's not eating or drinking, then there's no reason for it to be, it collapses, yeah. Then you have, behind that, you have the vertebra, the spine, and they stick out, and then you have muscles of the neck over there. So Rashi is saying that when we say over here, shechet min hatzadin is ksheira, Rashi learns that it means not just ksheira b'dieved, it's kosher even l'achila. However, Tosfos and Rambam and most other Rishonim disagree with that and say that no, it is only b'dieved, and part of the reason is because again you may end up hitting the mafrekis first without realizing it.
It doesn't really
matter either way. The mafrekis is the spinal cord. In particular, it means the spine. What do you mean? How are you hitting the spine? If you start shechting from this side, for example, you're going to hit the spine before you're going to. From the back of the neck, exactly.
You hit the bone first.
So therefore, you're going to hit the bone first.
If you do the shchita on the side, you're much more likely to get it first.
That may or may not be. I mean, so the fact of the matter is, if you do from the front, you're guaranteed to get the kona and the vesh first.
Exactly.
Right. If you do from the side, you may or may not, which is why a number of the Rishonim disagree with Rashi and say that when the Mishnah means shchitasik shera, it means only b'diyeved. L'chila, you shouldn't be doing it, so you may accidentally hit the mafrekis first.
With that logic, you're not obligated to cut the vessels, the neck vessels.
Neck vessels, we're going to talk about in a couple of blocks, whether you have to cut them or not. There's a difference between animals and birds. We'll get to that. Okay. Anyway. So if somebody shechts from the side, shchitasik shera, the shchita is kosher, l'chatchila according to Rashi, b'dieved according to everybody else. By the way, it also mentions in Shulchan Aruch that there are Rishonim who hold that b'chlal, even after the shchita, if you cut through the mafrekis, then you have a problem, and the animal shouldn't be considered to be kosher. And there's a long discussion, why should that be? L'chora, after you cut through the simanim, at that point, m'chatech v'asav alma. So there's a couple of reasons given. One of them being, because blood gets absorbed into the organs, and it's much harder to take out with melicha. Another reason, the Alter Rebbe talked about this in Siman Chav Dalet in Yerideya. Another reason is because if you didn't do, it's possible to do shchita without halacha b'hava. It's possible to do shchita all in one stroke, as we've learned before, and we'll learn later on as well. Well, if you do that, though, and you hit the mafrekis, it may demonstrate that you did drosa. It may show that you put too much pressure on the knife, which passes the shchit anyway. The Alter Rebbe discusses that as another possible reason why we should say that if you cut the mafrekis, even after you cut through the simanim, why it should be possible on those grounds, because it might mean that you did drosa.
Drosa is
pressing.
Pressing it down.
So drosa can be either of two kinds. Either it means like one stroke, like chopping off a person's head, or it means that you press down, like when you're cutting vegetables, for example. Mm-hmm. Either way, either kind of drosa makes it possible. Anyway, let's continue.
Can you tell if the person is drosa?
Not necessarily, no. that we, at the very beginning of the steps that we talked about, when you have to have certain kinds of people who have to be watched to make sure the shchita is kosher. We mentioned over there, we use the expression over there that you can have somebody watching over there, so you have the problem. Shema Yishu, Shema Yidrasu, Shema Yachlidu. So yeah, I mean, if you have somebody watching, then you'll be able to tell, but you may not be able to tell after the fact by looking at it. Okay. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. On the other hand, when it comes to melissa of a bird carbon, then if a person does melissa from the side of the neck, melikos ipsula, then the melissa is possible because, as we'll see in the Gemara, it has to be mimul orpar, it has to be specifically from the back of the neck. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Shechit mina ordis, if somebody shechs beginning from the back of the neck, shechitos ipsula, and the shechita is possible, again, because you're getting to the machrekes first, and therefore you're cutting through the spine and the spinal cord first, and the animal becomes chafe. Nevelu or Terefa is the case. Yeah, Nevelu. Yeah, basically. Hamorlik mina oris, melikosik shera. On the other hand, if you do melika from the back of the neck, the melika is shera, which doesn't just mean shera b'diyed. There it means that's the lachilogical way to do it. We're just using, once we use the expression solo, then we use shera for parallel. Okay. Hashechet mina sava shchitosik shera. If you shecht from the front of the neck, the shchita is kosher. Again, not just b'diyed, but lachilogical, that's the normal way, right? But if you do melika from the front and the melika is possible. So the basic rule is shekala orif kosher melika. The whole back of the neck is kosher, is a valid place for melika. But not the front and not the sides. And all of the front of the neck is a kosher place for shchita. Nimsa. So it comes out kosher b'shchita possible melika, kosher b'melika possible shchita. So we can summarize the situation: the part, and as we'll see in the Gemara, maybe other details as well. That's kosher by shchita is possible by melika, and vice versa. And by the way, that's going to bring us to the next few Mishnayos after this. Are going to digress from the main topic of Chulin and take up other dinim where you have the same kind of structure. What's kosher in this is possible in that, and vice versa. But after we get through the Gemara on this Mishnah. After we get through the Gemara on this Mishnah, beginning from Daf of Beis until for the next couple of laps of the end of the Perek, we're going to be digressing from the topic of Cholin to talk about other cases that you have like that, where what kosher in one is possible and the other and vice versa. Okay. So starting off the Gemara, my Oides. Now, when we say over here, we said that if a person shech from the Oides, or if he does melissa from the Oides, so we said the shechita is possible, the melissa is kosher. But the question is, what do we mean by Oides? Now, the thing is like this. The word oris can actually have two possible meanings. It can mean the back of the head, or it can mean the back of the neck. So we're going to see in a second that in the psukim, the back of the head or the back of the neck. No, it's not the same. The back of the head would be like this, and the back directly opposite the face. The back of the neck would be this. Think of when you put on tefillin. When you have the kesher, the dalad, the kesher shel tefillin, the dalad is supposed to rest on the oris. It's supposed to rest on the back of the head before it starts sloping down into the neck. That's why you have it on or mostly on the little protrusion over there.
That's not the neck.
No, that's what I'm saying. From there and then below is the beginning of the neck. We'll see later on when we get the Paris Eretz. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that someday. Yeah, okay, so, I'm sure, okay. So in Torah terminology, there's a bit of a difference, that you have oref means the back of the head, and mul oref, which we're going to say in a second, means the back of the neck. In Gemara terminology, they use the word oref sort of indiscriminately for both of those, which is what the Gemara is asking. When we say over here that a person does melissa from the oref, then it's kosher. So what do you mean? Ilam oref mamish, do you mean literally the back of the head? The ma'ir yeshoset. What do you mean? It's only possible by shchita. After the molik nami, by molik also it would be possible. Mimul oprei omenachmona. Because after all, the pasuk says that you have to shech. Facing, meaning a little bit distant from the oref. Not on the back of the head, below oprei, not the actual back of the head itself. Ela my oref, mimul oref. You're right. The word oref in our Mishnah means what the pasuk calls mimul oref, the back of the neck. A little bit. So again, in Gemara terminology, therefore, they're using the word oref to mean the whole back, including the back of the head and the back of the neck. That's why the Gemara is asking. So when our Mishnah uses the word oref, it doesn't mean the back of the head, it means the back of the neck. That is a place that's possible for shchita, but kosher for melissa.
So in Gemara terminology, oref is really new oref.
It's both. It's oref and mul oref.
It cannot be oref and mul oref. One is not the other.
It is. The word oref in the back. It means the whole back. It means the whole back That means the whole back, the whole thing over here is called...
Not it, not mortar.
Fine, but in the past, it says me more or and therefore it means the next thing. Okay. So that was the most question. Okay. Kachani Sefer, in fact, the Mishnah continues. Kola Oref, kosher from Malika. The entire Oref is kosher from Malika, and their Oref doesn't mean the back of the head, specifically it means the back of the neck. Okay. Minohani, really. So where do we know this from, that Malika is only kosher in the back of the neck, and what Mimul Orfe means? So the Tana Rabbanon, we learn a Braisa. When the Pasuk says Mimul Orfe, that means Mul Haroya Es Orfe. It has to be the part that's adjacent to and that sees the Orfe. In other words, not the Orfe itself, but the part that's adjacent to it, meaning the back of the neck. The Chenu Orfe. In English, would be the article, the back of the head. Right. So therefore, it's a mul oref means the necklace. V'cheinu omer b'hu yoshev mimuli, as we find that Balak complains to Bilam that the Jewish people are dwelling mimuli, which means near me, because they're right on the border of the Moab.
Opposite.
It can mean opposite, but it can mean also like, it can mean like some close to, but some distance away. You have in Sota, for example, the Gemara discusses over there when it says in Parashat Re'eh that you have to do the brachas and klolos and how grizim and how able halohem me ever yard and achare derech mevoy hashemesh over there you have the mul hagilgal. So yeah, the Gemara discusses over there, does mul hagilgal mean close to Gilgal or does it mean far away from Gilgal? Okay, but it could also be further away. So here we're saying that mul means it's a little bit distant, but not so distant. It's adjacent. And you have another pasuk where we see what the word oref means. The pasuk says, as Hashem says about the Jewish people, keep ponu like oref for like ponim. They're turning their back of their head to me, not their face. So we see since it contrasts Oref and Ponim, the implication is the Oref itself is what's directly opposite the face, namely the back of the head. So the Gemara says, "My Oymer, why do you need a second process to prove this?" The reason is because the Chitayma Oref Gufay Lo Yadin and Hecha. Because after all, you're telling me that Mimul Orfay means something that's next to the Oref. Okay, but you need a definition of what Oref itself is. How would you know the Hecha Lo Yadin and Hecha? We're not going to know where the Oref itself is from the word Mimul Orfay. Deneda Muldi Day, and then we would know what mul of it, what adjacent it is. Toshma, that is why we need the second pasuk. Kipono Ela, Odef, Volephonim, Mikal de Odef Vahade Ponim, meaning that the Odef, therefore, is exactly opposite the face, so therefore it is the back of the head. So therefore that clarifies it, so Odef means the back of the head. Right, so the Odef means the back of the head, we know from the pasuk in Yirmiyah. Once we know that, then we know that Mimul Orpe means the place immediately adjacent to that, which is the back of the neck. And therefore, when our Mishnah used the expression ha'oda, it meant what the Pasuk calls mimul oda. It didn't mean the back of the head, it meant the back of the neck. Okay. Fine.
The neck curve.
Okay. Amri b'nei Rabchia. Okay, now further on this topic about the proper place for Shchita and for Malika, the b'nei Rabchia said, their names are Yehuda and Chizkia, they said mitzvah Malika, the proper way for the Kohen to do Malika on a bird carbon, he should turn the simonim behind the oref, and then he should do melissa. In other words, they learn that what it means is you shouldn't be going indeed from the back of the neck and therefore cutting through, or we're going to see soon whether they mean you shouldn't or you don't have to, whatever. They learn that what it means is like this. You should be, or a way to do melissa is you turn the bird's neck. So that's the simonim are behind the oref. You turn the bird's neck, or you turn the part of the neck that includes the simonim or whatever, and you move it over. You turn them, whatever, so that they. No, it's not hard enough to choke it, obviously.
Doesn't mean the left or right.
Yeah, no, it means that it means. You twist the head a little bit, yeah. Match the simonim, yeah. V'choysa chasimonim levadim, and that way you will only cut the simonim. That way you will not cut through the mafrekes to begin. Because the idea is, if you have, like, okay, so like this you have, here's a chicken. Here's a chicken neck after shechita. So here you have the kone, and here you have the vesh. And behind them is the mafrekes over here. So B'nai Rav Chiya are saying that what you should do is you should twist the bird's neck, again, not enough to choke it, obviously, but enough that the simonim will be behind the mafrekes. And then not, in other words, that you'll turn the animal, you'll turn the bird's head, 180 degrees or as close to that as possible, so that when you're cutting, so that when you're holding the bird and about to cut through the back of the neck, what you're really cutting through is the front of the neck. What you're really cutting through is the stomach. Yeah.
You put the head of the bird front down?
You put the head of the bird, yes. So you you take the bird, what it is there's enough flexibility. Enough flexibility. There's enough flexibility in the bird's neck that you're able to move the simonim
forward
or backward, as the case may be, and then be able to shech them, and only then do you get to the mafresa. So that way, when you're coming, you're doing malika. This is malika, rather. We're talking about you're doing malika from the back. You're going to end up getting the simonim first. So that's the thing. The mitzvah of malika is to do that. Ika da'amri asmach. So I don't know enough about the bird. Because you could. That's what we're saying. They're not so rigid after all. I mean, they have a certain amount of flexibility to them. They have a certain amount of give to them. So therefore, if you're able to, you move them around the neck.
You have the maseke. So let's say here, the simanim are around.
Yeah.
I'm assuming the difference between a chicken and a bird is just one run different way.
Yeah. Well, it is true that with birds versus animals, it is true that
the
mafresa is always in the back. Yes, but actually the simonim are arranged a little bit differently in a bird than the simonim are arranged a little bit differently in a bird than they are in an animal. Here you have a diagram. The mafresa is over here. The kona and the vesh are over here. But there's enough give over there in the muscles that you're able to pull the kona and the vesh with the surrounding muscles so that they'll be behind the mafresis. And Bnei Rav Chiya are saying that's the proper way to do malik. Okay, because that's how it is. You want to take a chicken and experiment on it, you're going to die. Okay. Ika da'amri asmachsir. So there's different versions understanding what they mean by that. One version is you don't have to do that. It means that you could do it that way. You could cut through the mafrekas first, but you could also move the simonim behind the mafrekas and cut them first. The ikadami master davka, another version, another understanding of what Bnei Rav Chiya are saying, is you must do that. And mustabra commander ama asma.
The
Malika
is a very hard procedure.
And that's the part of it, I guess. Yeah.
That's,
yeah. Okay. Umistabra indeed it's logical to say, like the first explanation, that Ahmachir, that either way is kosher. They're just saying what's the ideal way to do it. But if you didn't do that and you cut through the mafrekas first, it's also okay. Mimai, why do we know that? Mitkatani, because our mission is said, Ashkirchit mana urdif, shritotip sula, hamurdik mana urdif, malikotip shera. Because we said, shrita from the back of the neck is possible, but malika from the back of the neck is kosher. Now, the Isaf Gadach Master Davka. Now, if you're going to tell me that Bnei Rav Chiya is saying you must move the Kona and the Vesh behind the Mafrekis before you shech. And so, therefore, when the Mishnah is saying that you did the Malika from the Urdah, it means only a Hechzer, my Irya Molik. Then why do you have to mention that would be true only of Malika? So, the Shechet Nami. Then the same thing would be true of Shita as well. The whole problem with shechting from the Urdah is that you're getting the Mafrekis first. If you manage with an animal also to turn the neck such that you have the Simonim where the mafrekas would normally be and vice versa, then fine, then you're cutting through the simonim first. So what's the problem? The fact that the Mishnah doesn't say it that way, the fact that the Mishnah says, Hamolik mina orif is kosher, but Ashurka mina orif is kosher, implies that we're not even talking about when you move the simonim, but we're saying that even if you didn't move the simonim, by Malika it's okay. By Malika it doesn't matter whether you cut through the mafrekas first or not. So therefore, we have to say that that's what Bnei Rav Chiya meant. You don't have to move them, but you could move them if you want. Good. So our Mishnah is talking about the case where you didn't move them aside, and therefore, they're saying either way it's kosher. It doesn't matter with Malika whether you cut through the mafrekas first.
Or not.
That's what we're saying. That's based on the Mishnah.
See how you could cut through the simanim without cutting through mafrekas.
If you turn them behind the mafrekas, then you could. Okay.
And you have to twist the head 360 degrees.
Okay, I don't know, 360 degrees. That's 360 degrees. Okay, back away.
180.
Okay, birds have a large range of motion in their necks anyway, much more than animals and people. Yeah. No, they have bones. Their necks are a lot more flexible than ours.
Do you have to do it?
That's the thing. So we're saying now, according to Bnei Rav Chiya, we're saying that you don't have to do it. You could do it, but you're not required to.
Okay. do what?
To turn the simonim to be behind the masechta. Okay.
That's why the skill was for cutting the
wound. Okay. However, Rav Yanai disagrees with this whole concept. He says, "Yikablu haroivin es tshuvasam." He says the roivin should receive their answer. In other words, I object to what they're saying, and I'm going to explain why. What is roivin? Rashi says roivin means hanaori, means a young man. Bnei Rav Chiya are relatively speaking young relative to Rav Yanai's generation. Reuven Margoliath actually explains interestingly in one of his svarim. Based on one of the Mephoshim on the Rishami, he wants to say that Reuven means the name of a place. So he brings from on the basis of various places, that this may have been a place outside of Bavel proper, but a place where there were distinguished Tamar Chamim, and therefore Rav Yanai calls them the Reuven, like they deserve respect because they came from a place of Torah, even though it's not Eretz Yisrael and it's not Bavel, it's like a third center of the Jewish people, but nevertheless, I still object to what they're saying. Why? Because our Mishnah finishes off, so it comes out that the case that kosher by shchita is possible by malika, kosher by malika possible by shchita, and vice versa. So what's kosher by malika is possible by shchita. Now, what is the Mishnah adding with those words? What is the Mishnah coming to exclude that we would have thought might be? Yeah, there's this. Yeah. Shouldn't we assume that the Mishnah is telling us that even if we put the simonim behind the oref, it would still be that it would be kosher by shchita and possible by melissa? So you Bnei Rav Chiya are telling me that you could put the simonim behind the mafrekes, but you don't have to. But based on the Mishnah, it seems that either way, if you do malika, even if it was a way that with shchita it would be kosher, because you did the simonim first, because the Mishnah says whatever's kosher by shchita is possible by malika, on that grounds alone it's possible. So that should mean you dafka shouldn't put the simonim behind the mafrekes. You dafka should cut through the mafrekes first, it sounds like. The answer is no. No, because that's the question. My lava ma'utim maxis simonim la'achora oris aloi. So wouldn't that exclude the case where you put the simonim behind the oris, where the Mishnah is implying that it would be kosher by shchita, because after all, you didn't cut through the mafrekas first, but the Mishnah seems to be implying it will still be kosher by mafrekas. The answer is no. Amar lava ma'achon aloi. No, you don't have to say that that's what the Mishnah is. Memayis, with those words, it could be the ma'uti shein the tziporin. It could be that the Mishnah is coming to exclude the case where you did shchita with an attached tooth or an attached fingernail. Now we learned that a couple of Mishnayos ago, that if you use something attached, then we said Rebbe holds that it's possible and halacha is like. In other words, we could say, why is the Mishnah mentioning this concept kosher b'shchita possible b'malika versus kosher b'malika possible b'shchita? The main thing the Mishnah wants to stress is that you have a case which is possible by shchita and kosher by malika, namely if you're using an attached fingernail or an attached tooth. Those things are kosher by malika, because you're supposed to use an attached fingernail, and they're possible by shchita. Once it mentions that, then it mentions also the other way around, that you have something that's kosher by shchita and possible by malika. Not necessarily is it excluding the case where you turn the simonim behind the mafrekes, where then maybe it would be kosher by either one. By the way, so that's Rashi's first and preferred explanation. Then Rashi brings that maybe what the Gemara means, maybe what Rav Baba Chana means, is also the part of the Mishnah that's saying what's kosher by shchita is possible by malika also includes the other way around. What if you use a detached fingernail to do the malika? Rashi says, though, he doesn't like that explanation, because then it's not considered malika. By definition, malika is done with the Kohen's own body. And also the Gemara is going to ask in a second that we learned it explicitly in the Mishnah. Yeah. And also the Gemara is going to ask in a second that this we don't need our Mishnah to tell us, because we learned it explicitly a few Mishnayos ago. We don't actually have a Mishnah that says in so many words that the Malika has to be done with an attached fingernail. So maybe that's the Chiddush. Okay, Tosfos argues on Rashi on a couple of grounds, one of them being that you do have a Mishnah in Zvachim that talks about Malika with a knife, which is possible. So we see from that that Malika by definition has to be with something attached. Okay. Tosfos also, by the way, brings up the point. Why are we mentioning a tooth over here? Can you do malika with your teeth? L'chora, you have to do malika with your fingernail. So Tosfos brings up two possibilities. One is that maybe we're not mentioning a tooth primarily, and we're mainly mentioning, because we mentioned before, teeth and nails together as far as shchita. So here we're mentioning them together as well. The other explanation, Tosfos says, is maybe not. We know that if the Kohen does Malika with his left hand, it's possible. We looked that in Zvachim. Right. But maybe indeed, if he does Malika with his teeth instead, it would be kosher. Same way, Tosfos says, as when it comes to Chalitza. The Yavama is supposed to untie the Yavam's shoe using her right hand. If she does it with her left hand, it's no good. But if she doesn't have hands at all and she does it using her teeth, it's kosher. So therefore, by the same logic, you know, now, of course, a Kohen has to have hands, otherwise he's a Balmum. But the point is, you could argue that maybe if he did it with his teeth, it could be kosher.
Pushing down.
Well, that's the definition of Malika, is pushing down, although we're going to say soon, maybe you could also go back and forth. But yeah, according to that way of looking at Tosfos, maybe he would be allowed, instead of doing Malika with his right fingernail, with his right thumbnail, maybe instead he could do it with his teeth, if he so desired. Okay.
What is the standard way? Is it to go to the Mafrekas?
So again, okay, so far what we're saying is that Bnei Rabchia are telling us you could do it either way. Rav Yanai is arguing with that because he says our Mishnah seems to be implying that that doesn't work. So wait, we're going to continue. So the question is, what do you mean shame to be pardoned? What do you mean the Mishnah is coming to tell us that if you do shchita with an attached fingernail or an attached tooth, it's possible? The Hedya Katani Lahu, we learned it explicitly a couple of Mishnahs ago. Ela, Amar Rav Yemi, yes, Rav Yemi says you're right. When it says at the end of our Mishnah, when it summarizes kosher b'shchita, possible b'malika, kosher b'malika, possible b'shchita, it's for a different meaning. It wants to tell us, the Mishnah wants to tell us that when it comes to shchita, the proper way is to go back and forth. When it comes to malika, you're not allowed to do back and forth. You have to adapt the push. So the question is, okay, that only works according to the opinion that says that indeed that's possible, which we're going to have on Amad Beis. We're going to have a discussion at that point. El Amanda Amav Kosher, but according to the opinion over there that says that it's kosher to go back and forth with Malika, the Kohen could do with his fingernail back and forth, and that would be kosher. Ma'ikalameba, then what are you going to say? What's the mission of being in Ma'ik then? The answer is, okay, very simple. Bnei Rabchia, Sabri Lach Amanda Amav Melech, maybe Malika Apostle. Very simple. Bnei Rabchia, who mentioned Neu Din in the first place, they would hold that in fact by Malika you have to press down, you cannot go back and forth. So the Mishnah is not excluding the case where you turn the simon in behind the order, then the Malika could be kosher, and Shchita would also be kosher. What does the Mishnah mean when it says that something that's kosher by Shchita is possible by Malika, and vice versa? It means the case of Molech Umeiz, which is kosher by Shchita and possible by Malika. Amar Rav Kahana, so more on this topic of Malika, how are you supposed to do? Amar Rav Kahana, mitzvah Malika koitzit v'yorin. The proper way of doing Malika is that you cut and you go down. In other words, no halacha, no hevah, you just press downward with the fingernail.
That's what we just said.
Vizui mitzvah, yeah, vizui mitzvah, so that's the proper way of doing the mitzvah, says Rav Kahana. You have to go through the Mafrekas anyhow because you're going through the Ura. However, no, because according to Bnei Rabchia, again, you could put the Simon in behind the Mafrekas and then go ahead and do Kosis to the Ura. So it's not necessarily a contradiction. Okay. Sovereign of Ovin Lamoma. Now, Rav Ovin thought to say, when Rav Kahana said that, he meant Kosis to the Ura Ein Molech Omevi Loi. Maybe Rav Kahana means that if you were to do Halacha Vava, it's actually possible. No, on the contrary, a Kolshikin, that as long as you don't have something where the Torah tells you explicitly you can't do it, the Torah tells you explicitly that Malika has to be on the Oda, Mimul Orpah, therefore any other place in the neck is possible, unlike the Chita where it can be on the side, like he said. But anything that Torah doesn't explicitly exclude from Malika is kosher. So therefore, the Torah didn't say anything about Kosis V'yored versus Molech Omevi.
Kosh again,
because if it's good for Shchita, how much more so it should be good for Malika, unless we're told otherwise. Umay Zuri Mitzvah. So what does Rav Kahana mean if that's the proper Mitzvah? Ema Af Zuri Mitzvah. So all he means is either one is an equally valid way of doing it. So therefore, the halacha is that when it comes to Malika, the halacha is either one is equally kosher. You can be, when it comes to Malika, you can do kosher to the yodid, you can push the fingernail in, you can do halacha back and forth motion to cut through. Either way, it's kosher. Either way, it does have to be done from the oda, but we have Bnei Rav Chia telling us that you could put the simon in behind the oda and do it that way.
But the hachila, what do you do?
The usual standard way would not necessarily be involving doing anything. The usual way would be kosher to the yodid going through the mafrekas.
So if you go like this,
then you could. No, you're allowed. You're allowed. I'm not still a chachil of the yevet. Either way is equally good. Okay. That's after he was supposed to. Either way is an equally valid way of doing it.
Okay.
No.
No?
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so now let's talk more about this business, about the Olef, and about places that are kosher and possible for shechita. And now we have to talk about, we're going to be bringing in something called Ikur Simon. Now you have like Ikur, Ayin Yud Kuf Vav Rech, Ikur Simon, Meloshon Okar, Meloshon Uprooting. Now, okay, the thing is like, okay, we have to understand as follows. Earlier in our perek on that test, when the Gemara summarized over there the halachas of the five basic halachas of shechita, you had over there it mentioned over there the five hilchos shechita, the eloh and hilchos shechita, shehiyah dirasa chalada agrama veikur. So Rashi gave a brief definition of each one of them. And ikur basically means like this. It means One meaning of ikur is that you rip the simonim rather than cutting them, because we talked a few days ago about knives with nicks and whatever. The other idea of ikur is if the simonim themselves are torn away from the muscles or ligaments or whatever that they're supposed to be attached to inside the neck.
You may even be able
to see it while the animal's alive, actually, because you'll see that they're like hanging, they're hanging off.
So ikur
for our purpose that we're going to be dealing with in our Gemara over here is talking about where they're detached from their normal attachments along the jaw and along the inside of the neck.
The
kana and or the vesh.
They detach after the shechita?
No, before the shechita we're talking about.
Before the shechita.
Now, Rashi learns over there that what it is the an animal that has ikur like that, Rashi learns over there, is already tshreita. Rashi learns that way. Tosfos brings over there from the Bahag, who says, actually not. The animal is not necessarily tshreita as a result of that. However, what it is shechita can't be done to such an animal. So it's going to end up being the vela, because you can't shecht it. But the animal itself is mutter while it's alive, and in fact, what Amar and Shulchan Aruch point out, a practical distinction of that would be, if the animal's treifa, then even while it's alive, you can't use its milk or you can't use its eggs. If the animal is essentially kosher, you just are not able to shecht it, then the milk and the eggs are still mutter. Okay, so now we're going to talk about something involved, now we're going to talk a bit about this business of ikur simon. A treifa animal, right, you can't use the milk and you can't use the eggs, right.
The whole question is, you have to make operations on
about cows and where they make a hole in the stomach. Yeah, we'll deal with Bezos Hashem when we get to Perek Elu today, so when we talk about the Korvas Akeres. So they do. Nowadays, by the way, in this book over here, in Kol and Illuminated, he has a whole discussion of all the pros and cons of it, and then there's even a newer edition where he has further details about it. But yeah, nowadays they have a lot of times the animals get bloated with intestinal gas, and so they puncture their stomach in order to release the gas, and you have a real question as far as cashless with them. Because they have to get out the gas somehow. It's one way of doing it. So you have a whole issue. It gets into a whole issue in Hilchos Treifa. We'll deal with it in a few weeks.
Now they have big farms. They have to actually walk around and check animals.
So I mean, there are reasons to be mateful with at least some of these cases. But whatever, yeah. I mean, nowadays, actually, they have other procedures that they're, because of this problem, they developed other procedures that they're able to do that cause less of an issue with Hilchos Kashrus. So we'll get to it later on in Perek Eilu Treifa when we deal with Treifa of the stomach. Okay. Anything that is kosher in shechita, the parallel part of the oref is kosher for the parallel thing when it comes to the oref is kosher for melissa. Now Rashi stresses we're not talking about the halachas of shechita because you have many other things. We just said that molech or maybe is kosher by both of them. What Shmuel is talking about, what part of the neck can you do shechita versus melissa? Whatever part of the neck is kosher for shechita, the parallel part of the oref, meaning as far as higher and lower on the neck, meaning to say the same level, opposite, is kosher by melissa. Okay, implying how possible shechita, possible melissa. Okay, so the implication seems to be that any part of the neck that's possible, that any level of the neck, higher or lower, that's possible for shechita, apparently is also possible for melissa. L'ma'uti mai. So the question is, what is he coming to be memaised by that? What is he coming to be memaised by that? Are we talking about? Are we going to say that Shmuel is talking about that you have if in part of the neck? Now the simonim. When we talk about ikur simonim, it doesn't necessarily have to be that they're torn from their moorings, from their ligaments or whatever, along the entire length of the neck. You could have one place where they're detached, and then in other places they're still being held by the muscles and the ligaments and whatever. So is Shmuel trying to tell us that if you have a part of the neck of the animal or of the bird where there's ikur simonim, that part you can't do shchita in, which we're going to talk about in the next perek about the concept that you can't do shchita on simonim shneku, again according to Rashi because the animal is tresa, and according to the Bahag because that part of the neck you would be able to tell while the animal is alive. That's what I'm saying. You would be able to tell that because you'd look at the neck and you'd see that it's not shaped properly or whatever. I don't know. I guess if you're a shchita or you're a veterinarian, you'd know what to look for.
That's what I'm asking.
It's hanging, very funny. If it's hanging, funny, like, yeah. Okay. So, are you telling me that Shmuel is saying if you have a part of the neck where there's ikur simonim, where therefore you can't shech, then therefore he's saying you also can't do malika? The problem with that is, v'hatani, Rami bar Yechezkel, ein ikur simonim v'oyis. But Rami bar Yechezkel teaches a braisa that actually when it comes to a bird, there's no such thing. Ikur simonim is not an issue by a bird. And we're talking about malika, which is by bird. So therefore, what's the problem?
Well, he holds.
He brings a braisa. I'll tony Rami by Yechezkel. So unless we have something against that braisa, then yes.
It could be
enough working. So the Papa says, no, what Shmuel means to exclude by saying whatever part of the neck, whatever levels of the neck are kosher for shchita, the same levels in the back are kosher for malika, he means to exclude the head, the back of the head. Well, obviously, you can't do malika on the head. We just said mul'orpoi means davka, the back of the neck, not the back of the head. Yeah. The answer is my roishay shifu roishay. You're right, but when we say roishay, we don't mean we mean the part of the head where it starts slanting downward. From the point where it starts slanting downward on the bird. Or, Rashi says, another possibility, the slant could be that he did the malika on an angle, starting in the head. Shipui means a slant. Yeah. So therefore, in other words, okay, so going to knock out the shipui roshay. So suppose he starts doing the malika from where the head of the bird starts sloping backwards. He starts doing the malika over there incorrectly because he's supposed to be doing it further down. He's supposed to be doing it on the olif.
And starts here.
So he starts, let's say, over here at the dotted line.
Yeah.
So in other words, here, you have over here, you have the two dotted lines mark the highest and lowest points for shchita, and therefore also the highest and lowest points for malika. So we should be talking about, let's say, so from where the head starts sloping backward, he started doing the malika over there, and then he went on an angle. The higrim va'ozal ad-matatatoy, and then he went on an angle until he reached, till within the neck itself, he reached the simon. And the reason why that would be possible, the chiddush of Huna Amar Ravasi. That would be according to what Rav Huna said in the name of Ravasi that we learned yesterday, one of the many opinions on this subject, where we said to Amar Rav Huna Amar Ravasi, Higrim Shlish Vashachat Shnei Shlish Fula. If you started with Hagroma, you started shechting in the wrong part of the neck,
right.
Then you ended up the remaining two-thirds were done correctly, right. Then Rav Huna learns in the name of Ravasi that everybody would agree it's possible. Because we started wrong. So Shmuel would be saying the same thing would be true as far as malika. You shouldn't think, in other words, since the fact of the matter is you did two-thirds correctly. No, it's because you did the beginning of it incorrectly, therefore you have a problem. By the way, I mean, so we're mentioning over here that Hagroma is relevant to malika as well. Now we're saying, on the other hand, Jrosa is not relevant to malika because you are allowed to press down. There's actually a machlokas we're showing him whether some of the other things that passel shchita, for example, shahia, pausing during the shchita, would pausing make malika possible? Maybe not. You have different rishonim talk about those possibilities. We're talking about malika by definition is on a bird. Malika by definition is on a bird. Shchita obviously they passel. It's halacha meshmitin. Okay. Okay, so now getting back to, we said that Rami bar Yechezkel mentioned in his braisa, he said that there's no problem of ikur simonim in a bird. So, Tani Rami by Yechezkel Ein Ikur Simonim Ba'oi. This that Rami by Yechezkel is teaching in a Braisa, that there's no such thing as Ikur Simonim by an Oif. And therefore, in other words, there's no problem. You could do Shchita there, you could do Melita there, even though that particular part of the neck, the Simonim, are hanging where they shouldn't. Loi Amoran Elo Lamanda Oma Ein Shchita Lo'oif Min Asarida. Apparently, that would only work according to the opinion that says, which we're going to learn in the next parak, that minat Torah, a bird, doesn't require shchita. We're going to talk about it in the next parak. An animal definitely requires...
Only accepts melita?
No, not only accepts melita. Actually, the Koroyim claim that, but that's never mind them. But no, what it means is, according to them, you don't have to shech the bird. Any way in which the simonim are cut in a bird is a valid way, minat Torah, of killing a bird.
Any area.
Bird
needs chicken also?
Bird? Yeah, well, bird, bird, yeah, bird, bird, period, yeah.
So there's no agrama, he's saying.
No, right. Well, no agrama, but it also means, in other words, there's no problem with drasa, there's no problem with shahiya, or any of the above. You could chop off its neck. Yeah, it would include chickens as well. Well, wait. That's not necessarily halacha. Wait. And besides, even midrabanan, they definitely require shchita anyway. Even according to this opinion, that doesn't require minat Torah, Rashi says right over here, Elam Midivar Sosin. So midrabanan is still actually right.
So that implies, according to Rashi, it could be midrabanan.
According to the Gemara itself is saying that there's two opinions, which we're going to talk about them in more detail later on in the next test, that's for Zion Kokhet. Avalam under Omer Yeshchit Allah minat Torah, but Rav Acha Brei D'Rabbeinu is arguing, if you say that minat Torah birds do require shchita, that's part of the same Torah Shabbat Peh, the same Alach L'Mesh Mitzinai, that says that animals need shchita, well then, yesh ikur, then in that case, ikur simonim would be relevant as far as a bird also.
Right.
If the simonim, because the pashtus, the same rules would apply. If ikur simonim is a problem by a behemah, and it makes it treif according to Rashi, or it makes it impossible to do the shchita according to the bag, then the same thing should apply to a bird, the pashtus.
When you said the previous one said is that ikur
meant that ikur is not an issue. It means that it's not an issue. You can shech, you can do malika, you can do whatever you want. Yeah. So the idea would be, now again, we're going to learn in the next parak the reasons behind the different opinions over there. You have shchita is only mentioned explicitly in connection with animals, with a vaccine of kohol mitzonka. So you have how we learn birds or how we don't learn birds that we're going to talk about in the next parak. We have a hekish, or we don't have a hekish, as the case may be, whatever. So therefore. We'll see. We'll get to it later on. Another another week, Rav Hashem, and we'll get to it. Okay. So the point is, in other words, that Rav Acha Brei D'Rabbeinu is arguing this that Rami Bar Yechezkel is telling us that there's no issue of ikur in a bird. That's not necessarily universally accepted. It depends whether you hold that a bird requires shittim and a fighter or not. Amalei, so Rav Ashi answers in Adrabe Ipcha Mistabra. On the contrary, you could argue the other way. You could say like this, Lamanda Amma Yesh Shchita La'os Minat Torah, according to the opinion that birds require Shchita Minat Torah, in other words, it's part of the same halacha of Moshe Mitzinai, you could say, Ikka Lamemar, but you could argue like this, the Hochi Agmere, that you could argue, okay, but after all, most of the halachas of Shchita are halacha of Moshe Mitzinai, in the Chumash it doesn't say very much about the details, so therefore we could say, the Hochi Agmere, this is how Hashem taught Moshe, the Ein Ikur. You could argue, Hashem taught Moshe that birds do require shchita. However, at the same time, Hashem taught Moshe that there's an exception, that with birds there's no issue of ikur, you can still shech them, even if the simonim are necker, or the animal is not today, because the case may be. You have to do shchita, but there's no issue of ikur. V'afilu l'manda amaki behema, or even if you're going to go according to the opinion that says that we learn that birds require shchita from a hekesh, because we have two different ways in the Gemara over there of saying how we know that minat Torah birds require shchita. Is it that it's part of the same halacha of Moshe Mitzinai, that animals, the details of animal shchita also include the details of bird shchita? Or is it because we have a hekesh in the pasuk? Zois tera for behema v'ha'oish. So therefore, behema and oish. It says v'ha'oish, yeah.
If there's a hekesh, it seems to imply that there could not be, it's not Moshe Mitzinai.
That would mean, in other words, that would mean that the details of shchita are still halacha Moshe Mitzinai. You don't have shahir or drasa or any of these. Yeah, the details, yeah. But the basic concept, we can look at it like this. You have three different opinions. You have an opinion that ain shchita lo'ot minat Torah, that minat Torah b'chalal, there's no concept that birds require shchita. Minat Torah, you can kill them any way you want as long as you cut the simonim and eat them. You have one opinion that says that it is minat Torah, but halacha Moshe Mitzinai. And you have another one that says that birds require shchita.
Right.
And you have another opinion that says that it is minat Torah based on the hekesh zois peretz behemah. So if we say, so within those two opinions, if we say it's halacha Moshe Sinai, fine. We could say Hashem told Moshe that broods require shkita. At the same time, Hashem told Moshe, you should know, though, by the way, ikur doesn't apply to them. Or even if you argue that you're going to learn birds from the behemoth using a hekesh, you could argue that in Ikur, like having a behemoth, you could argue that the hekesh only teaches us that they both require shchita, but not necessarily that the rules of Ikur are the same for both. So therefore, Fakir, you could argue that Rami by Yechezkel's Braisa is according to the opinion that birds require shchita in Atzeret.
Without requiring Ikur.
Without and still ikur is not a problem. Elul amanda omer ein shchita lo oif min atora elul midivrei sofrim. But b'keres, if you're going to say that the whole concept that birds require shchita is midrabanan, well after all mehechik midrabo. Well after all, where are the chachamim getting that birds should require shchita midbehema? Well after all, they themselves are learning it from a behema. They're saying basically that since behemoths require shchita, therefore we're going to make a takana that birds require shchita as well. In that case, call a milsik a behemoth. But yes, then we should argue that they would have made the rules to be as similar as possible. When it's a halacha or it's a hekesh, fine, okay, you have the Torah is not always logical, at least according to our human logic. The Torah is Chochmas Eretzon Yisrael HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so it has details in it we don't understand. We could say that for whatever reason that we don't understand, Hashem decided that birds don't have an issue with ikur, unlike animals. But if you're going to say it's a konas chachamim, the chachamim are expected to be consistent and logical in their takonas. So therefore, if I care, then you should argue that the Braisa doesn't follow that opinion. Okay. So we don't know so far. Okay. Now, though, further on this topic, Amar Ravina, Amali Ravin Bakisi, so Ravina says, here's a further detail we need to know about this bride, so that Ravin Bakisi, or Rava Bakisi, informed me, Hodetani Rami Bayechezkel, En Ikus, Simonin Ba'oi. This concept that Rami Bayechezkel said in his bride, that Ikur is not an issue by birds, actually, Loyamarin Eleba Melissa. That really only applies to Melissa, because since we know by Melissa that already two of the psulim of shchita don't apply to it, at least. Drosa doesn't apply, because you said before you could be pressing down. Chalodja, which the Gemara is going to take up soon. What? Chalodja is when the knife is hidden. One way could be that you cut into the thickness of the neck. And then like you cut outward from there.
Shariah also doesn't apply.
What? Shahiyah may or may not apply, that depends on the different Rishonim, but we know at least that Jirasa and Chalada don't apply to Melissa.
Chalada
means that...
all certain point you can't deny.
Right. So the Gemara is going to take up soon some of that detail about Chalada, and then we'll talk about it more in detail in the next paragraph. So once we say that two out of the five things already definitely don't apply to Melissa, fine, then we could say that Ikur doesn't apply to them. But when it comes to shchita, we would have to say that, no, we don't say that. We would say that ikur simonim does apply, and therefore, in other words, either according to Rashi, it means the bird is nevela or trefa, as the case may be, or according to the Bahag, it is kosher, you're just not able to shechit. Yes.
So only for Malika.
So the question is, which in that case, in that case, in the previous discussion that we were saying, does it work according to the opinion, yes, shchita la'oif min atzora, or ain't shchita la'oif min atzora, then that wouldn't be relevant, because he's not talking about shchita anyway. The question is, what do you mean? We said on Amud Aleph that Rabbi Yirmiya said in the name of Shmuel, that whatever is kosher by shchita, that whatever part of the neck is kosher by shchita, the parallel part of the back of the neck is kosher by melika, implying how possible, but whatever is possible by melika, by shchita, is possible by melika. And we argued that that means he's coming to talk about the case of ikur simanim, and we said not only on the basis of Rami Bar Yechezkel's braisa. But if you're telling me now that Rami Bar Yechezkel's braisa is only talking about melika anyway, then why can't we say that that's what Shmuel meant? The answer is, I hope so. Okay, you're right. Of necessity, you have to say that what Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying disagrees with Robin Bartisi's explanation. Robin Bartisi would understand that Braisa is referring only to Melissa, but Ikur by Melissa, that Melissa will still be kosher even if it's Ikur, but not Shchita. Rabbi Yemi will understand that the Braisa is referring to both, but only according to one or the other opinion of whether Shita of birds is in a third or not. Okay.
They both are Moraim?
They're all Amoraim we're dealing with over here. Yeah, I mean, although Rami Barichelko brought a Braisa, so Braisa is a strong thing.
Braisa is from
Tanai? Braisa is from Tanai, yeah. So it means that he taught this, but he brought this Braisa to the Smadrish and he was a thing.
The Braisa means
as opposed to a thing, but yeah. It means that it came from Tanoim, it just wasn't included in the mission. Okay. Rashi makes the point over here that actually in the next parak if you have Ikur Simonim before the Shchita is finished, then no good. So there, and there Rashi says the mission over there is actually referring to a bird. Because by bird, you only need to cut one simon, and you have a case over there where you cut one simon, and then the other simon was nefer. Implying, no, so in other words, it means, therefore, Rashi says, that the halacha is not like this braisa of Rami Bar Yechezkel. We can't say that there's no ikur simonim when it comes to shchita.
So there is.
But there is ikur simonim, and, yeah, so Rashi, even by birds, right. So Rashi says, actually, okay, I mean, you have a Mishnah, Rami Bar Yechezkel has a Braisa, so what? There could be different opinions. But you could say, again, that Rami Bar Yechezkel's Braisa, that you have the different opinions, whether yes, Shchita L'Oishman HaSorah, or Ein Shchita L'Oishman HaSorah. That part we're not certain about. Therefore, Rashi says, the bottom line is, it's a Suffolk Zoraisa. If you have Ikur Simonim by a bird, you're left with a Suffolk Zoraisa, and Suffolk Zoraisa, you have to go L'Chumra. So therefore, if you have Ikur Simonim by a bird, in short, then mitzad ha-sofik, you have to say that it's possible. That's halacha. That's halacha. So therefore, Ikur Simonim really is an issue by a bird, unlike what we were just saying before. Maybe it's not an issue by Malika, but it's definitely an issue by Shlita.